This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757, and the email is talk@talklouisiana.org. And we begin today with Lisa Freeman. She is the Executive Director of the Louisiana Highway Safety Commission, celebrating a year on the job. And Lisa is a former prosecutor, a lawyer, graduate of the Catholic University of America. Some famous people came from that university in Louisiana, right?
That's correct.
Mitch Landrieu,
yes.
And Stephen Wagesback.
Yes.
And you came home from Washington, and you've been back a while. And Lisa's father was the former Lieutenant Governor of Louisiana, Bobby Freeman. He died 3 years ago, but he was a big man in many ways. Most people don't know he's an LSU Athletic Hall of Famer.
Absolutely. He went through LSU on a boxing scholarship. And back in those days, boxing was the equivalent of what football at LSU is today.
Paul Dietzel told me when he arrived at LSU in 1954 that boxing was the biggest sport on campus.
It was. It was.
It's a shame they don't have boxing now, but they decided it was too brutal. Imagine that. Football's okay, but boxing is prohibited because of brutality. But it was huge, and of course, Bobby Freeman was very, very good at it. LSU was winning national championships. They won one in boxing before they won the 1958 football title. But your dad left quite a mark both in sports and in politics. And your mother, the lovely Mary Ann, was a member of the LSU board, I recall, a few years ago.
That's correct. You have an excellent memory.
Well, you're doing work trying to make our roads safer, and we've got lots of work to do. How's it looking out there right now?
Well, as you said, we have lots of work to do, and it's going to take a village. And I'm very fortunate to say that of all the jobs that I've had, which I've been incredibly blessed in my public service career, this is the most rewarding job I think that there is. And those people with whom we partner and our stakeholders in the traffic safety community, they're so committed. It's such a gratifying experience to be able to work with them day in, day out, to do what is hard work and what is slow cultural change and social normalizing toward good driving behavior.
You can only do so much. You, of course, don't control the state budget, but a lot of people gripe about roads and the roads in our state. Some are good and some are not so good.
Well, actually, there are three contributing factors to traffic crashes. One of those factors are roadway and environment concerns. Another is the vehicle. And the third is driver and driver behavior. Driver behavior is actually attributable to 94% of the traffic crashes.
94%.
94% of traffic crashes are the result of the driver engaging in, you know, behavior that is counter to good safety measures.
Well, in the last decade, we've had this advent of everybody having a phone and many of them using them while they're driving. Some people call this show, I'm sure, while they're driving, but I know they have the number plugged in, so they just hit a button and it goes, so they're not distracted at all, but it is a serious issue, distracted driving.
Distracted driving is a serious issue. It has been for some time, but I think it's finally getting some traction publicly. Louisiana, in our office, we have a campaign, Just Drive. If you're doing anything other than just driving, then you are distracted. Distraction is, whether it's the driver or other road users, the motorcyclists, the bicyclists, the pedestrians, mm-hmm. You know, everyone has to be engaged in what is, you know, the proper use of the roadway.
How do we make people less distracted?
Well, I think that in any situation, a topic like this, you eat it one bite at a time. And one of the things that's being done nationally and state by state are hands-free laws. Georgia recently last year went to a hands-free law, and within, I think, 2 months, saw a dramatic decrease in their traffic crash data. And if we can replicate that throughout the country, then I think that is one bite of the huge problem that we can take, you know, at least mm-hmm. legislatively. There are other things to do. You know, education is is a huge part of what we do at the Highway Safety Commission. So explaining to people that, you know, operating a multi-ton vehicle is something that requires, you know, your full engagement, and that you cannot be engaged in any other action activity that would, you know, disengage you or demean from your full attention to the roadway.
If we had a hands-free law in Louisiana, that would mean we couldn't use our cell phone with our hands, correct?
Correct.
And you think that would be good. Right now we do have, if I remember correctly, we do have a law against texting while driving.
That's correct.
But we still, according to the law, can talk to people while we're driving, right?
That's correct.
Okay. But Georgia enacted this, and things have gotten better there.
And some other states recently have. I think that New Mexico, they're involved with their legislative session this year. They're in our region with states in the highway safety region that Louisiana belongs to, and they're trying to aim for a hands-free law this session. So bit by bit, you know, states are appealing to their legislatures to go that route. And if they haven't found success on the first try, then they return for subsequent attempts.
Now, we also have an issue with impaired driving. Hiller Moore was on this show last week and noted that in this parish, and we have a high murder rate in our parish, more people will probably die of opioid addiction or abuse than from homicides. And I'm sure some of these people, they don't die, but they're behind the wheel, and that has to be an issue.
Well, impairment is impairment, regardless of the source. And so much of the time, people think of impairment as being strictly alcohol-related. And while that has traditionally been the situation, I think even on a national level, and certainly statewide, we are reconciling the fact that drugged driving, impairment by other substances beyond alcohol, are staring us in the face and requiring an immediate reaction. And we are doing that. But the stats are really alarming. And, you know, when you talk about these numbers, they're stunning. Two-thirds of all the samples that are tested by the State Police Crime Lab are positive for alcohol. And of those, 0.15 is the BAC level, which is almost double what the presumptive level
right,
for impairment
0.08,
is.
Yeah.
Right. That's the majority of what they're seeing.
Most of them are at 0.15 or above?
0.15.
Right.
Over half are over 0.08, which is the presumptive level. You mentioned opioids, Jim. One-third of those samples are positive for at least one opioid. Two-thirds are positive for a drug, at least one drug of impairment, and that's with alcohol. And then one-third are actually positive for the THC metabolite, which is cannabis, marijuana. So what toxicological information is coming out of the data that's being crunched? It is alarming, and it requires, you know, a response, and that's what we're trying to do in the way of funding enforcement efforts and education efforts.
877-217-5757 is your number. Our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. For Lisa Freeman, Executive Director of the Louisiana Highway Safety Commission, and this seems like an obvious question, but an important one. Charlie downtown asks how we compare with other states in our rates of highway fatalities.
Actually, across the country, the numbers are not going in the right direction. Louisiana, if you can say it, that fortunately we're not mimicking the national trend to that level. We're lagging behind, which is good. It's not good enough. There's still more work clearly that needs to be done. You know, when I speak at various events, and even in my role as a former prosecutor, you state that zero is your goal, and that is not an unrealistic goal. I think that we can arrive there. I don't know when. I know that we are soldiering on every day to get to that zero point, but certainly in the state and nationally, there's a very significant awareness that impaired driving has to be reckoned with.
John in New Roads writes that giant tractors are the number one cause of road degradation in Pointe Coupee Parish, an area you know pretty well. What can you do about that, if anything?
Well, I'm originally from Iberville, which is, you
not
know,
too far
that's adjacent to Pointe Coupee. I will say that, you know, all road users have obligations, you know, to operate their vehicles in the most safe manner. And I don't know particularly in that jurisdiction, but our data that we get from our office, you know, does indicate which areas in the state, which venues are identifiable for certain initiatives, whether those programs be, you know, to decrease impaired driving or occupant protection. You know, the data in Pointe Coupee and everywhere else, you know, tells us what our blueprint is for better safety.
877-217-5757, another segment with Lisa Freeman, Executive Director of Louisiana Highway Safety Commission. We'll talk about what's going on with motorcycles. There is a spike in motorcycle fatalities back after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757. Matt Doyle is producing in another segment with Lisa Freeman, a lawyer and longtime Louisiana person of interest. She was a prosecutor, and her family is famous in Louisiana. Her mother was a member of the LSU Board of Supervisors when some coaches like Mike Archer and Bill Arnsparger, all those happenings in the 80s happened under her watch. And, of course, her dad was the Lieutenant Governor Robert L. Bobby Freeman. 877-217-5757. A recent spike in motorcycle fatalities in the state is a cause for concern. I think, what is it, about 100 people die each year from motorcycle fatalities in Louisiana? Are they not wearing their helmets?
No, it's not a helmet issue. And it's not really just attributable to one factor, but we have seen, especially recently, an uptick, which is quite disturbing. 96 people died last year in motorcycle fatalities, and you know it's just an unacceptable number when you see it being increased by, you know, upwards of 5, 6, 7%.
Well, it's a case in which you are, if you're a motorcycle rider, advised to wear your helmet. But we had a big debate about this a few years back, mm-hmm. with Governor Mike Foster. He was one of those who said, no helmets, no helmets. It bothers me when I'm riding. But I think most people would differ as far as safety.
Well, and I think most people, especially with the public awareness being what it is and the research, you know, having been, you know, shown to that mandatory helmet use by drivers and passengers the way it is in Louisiana is really the way to go.
Well, we have potholes, manhole covers, things like that, and we're riding a motorcycle and you hit one of those, it can be a bad result. Is there any way to be safe enough to notice those before you get there?
Well, I think that, you know, regardless of what vehicle you're operating, whether it's an SUV or a motorcycle, you know, you always want to drive defensively. To the extent that you know what your terrain is going to be, to plan accordingly, I think planning and preparation to a large extent, you know, in any outing, especially long-term vacation outings, you know, that front time preparation, mm-hmm. will eliminate, I think, some you know, issues on the back end.
I see one of your numbers, nearly 40% of all motorcycle crashes are caused by another vehicle turning left in front of the motorcyclist.
That is correct. And when we do news releases regarding motorcycle safety, we try to, you know, have a balanced approach. We do not just instruct motorcyclists on how we believe that they can, you know, better operate, you know, their equipment, but also the motorists on the roadway, how they can be aware of motorcyclists. I mean, they're very vulnerable. They're relatively small in comparison to the other vehicles on the road, and oftentimes, you know, motorists just do not see them.
Always allow 3 to 4 seconds if you're a driver and you have,
correct.
A motorcyclist, because, as you know, if there's contact, it's not like a little a fender bender. It's very serious when it's a car and a motorcycle.
Right.
Here's Chuck writing. First, I believe we are He says, we test for alcohol level in the blood, assuming that this affects everyone the same. Is that assumption correct? If we tested ability, say reflex time or something like that, we might be able to create a text which encompasses effects from all forms of drugs and ability to drive. He's got a couple of observations there. Some people do react differently when they consume alcohol, there's no doubt. But is there any way to monitor this better than we are?
Well, I know that with alcohol consumption, you know, for years NHTSA has done research, and that's why that 0.08 threshold for impairment has been adopted by every state and territory in the United States, because it is at that level that there is presumptive impairment, regardless of who the offender might be.
And another listener, Lang, asks for you to cite any public web portal which has some of the data that you mentioned.
Sure. Well, our website, lahighwaysafety.org, is a resource. So is the Highway Safety Research Group at LSU, which analyzes the data that we collect. And the DestinationZeroDeaths.com mm-hmm. website is also another location where you can avail yourself of those kinds of stats and information.
Here's something from Peter asking about the ages in which most accidents and fatalities occur. Younger people pay more for insurance, but are they the culprits when it comes to the fatalities, most of the fatalities on the road?
Well, actually, the youth population is overrepresented in traffic crashes, especially alcohol-related traffic crashes.
Men more than women, too, I would think. Men
yes.
generally pay more in insurance, and that's the reason why we're
yes.
more likely to have an accident when you look at the raw numbers. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Lisa Freeman.
Good morning, Jim. My questions are this. I notice every morning in the rush hour traffic and afternoon that there are accidents that are caused by people tailgating at like 70, 80 miles an hour, and they're right up on somebody's bumper, and when, you know, there's no reaction time or safe space. And my question is for the 18-wheeler drivers, is the fact that they're falling asleep, I mean, they really can drive longer hours than I think is safe. Thanks.
Thank you, Phil. Lisa?
Thank you, Phil, for the question. With respect to you referring to the situations you observe as accidents, we in the highway safety community refer to those situations as crashes. We believe that most, if not all, of crashes are preventable, especially when it comes to alcohol impairment. That is a 100% preventable situation. Now, you also mentioned drowsy driving that you believe to ascribe to commercial drivers. Actually, NHTSA has for some years now been acquiring data on that particular situation, and I think that we're all going to see, you know, more results that we'll be able to develop some strategies on dealing with drowsy drivers, and not just for the commercial vehicles, but for just, you know, normal roadway users.
Gustavo in Goodwood. Hi, Gustavo. You're on the air.
Good morning. I may be totally out of line asking this question or proposing this idea, but every time there is an accident in the morning time, say between 5 and 8 or any other time, but mainly early in the morning, it affects a tremendous amount of people going to work or going to school or what have you on the interstate, and especially in what we still continue to call the new bridge. So how far-fetched would it be to levy a hefty fine to the individual at fault, being that it affects so many commuters?
Well, you are a prosecutor. We're gonna throw the book at people who have accidents at rush hour.
I will say that, you know,
Gustavo might be onto something here.
Well, criminal justice consequences are part of, you know, the countermeasure repertoire that you know we respond to these situations from, and there is, as Gustavo pointed out, you know, there's a practical downside of crashes. Non-fatal ones, and fatal ones, of course, the economics simply are just stunning. In the United States, the cost of traffic crashes and fatalities, it's a $44 billion cost to this country. Here in Louisiana, it's $9 billion. And so when you get past, if you can even get past, you know, the loss of life, because those are individuals. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look at 700, you know, fatalities that Louisiana had, those are individual lives that and families that are just devastated permanently. But the economics are also, you know, quite paralyzing when you think of that $9 billion price tag that no one has, you know, in surplus.
Well, we thank you for joining us, Lisa Freeman, the executive director of the Louisiana Highway Safety Commission, and we'll be calling on you again soon. And
thank
hopefully
you, Jim.
Things will continue to get a bit better on our roads. Always good to see you.
Thank you.